You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
You know who had a really good weekend? Mistress Marley. She's a pro dom in New York City, and she starred in a trends piece in the New York Times, published on Sunday. The lead, the opening scenes of the story, the first few paragraphs, the lead was about a trip to Mexico that Mistress Marley took with some of her friends, a trip entirely paid for by Mistress Marley's FinSubs. Her subs poured money into her Cash App account when, well, when she ordered them to, is the obvious phrase to insert here, but when she invited them to would probably be more accurate. Because no one has to send Mistress Marley money when she orders them to. It's just that some men out there, her fin subs, like sending her money when she orders them to, or pretends to order them to. And I can only imagine that more money from new clients, from new fin subs, has been pouring into Mistress Marley's checking account since Alexandra Weiss's story ran in the style section this weekend. FinDom, which we've talked about on the show a lot, but hasn't been talked about in the New York Times much, FinDom, Weiss explains to New York Times readers, quote, is a form of BDSM that has flourished during the pandemic when many sex workers and their customers have migrated online because of social distancing precautions. You know, you don't have to look around the internet for very long to find videos of FinDoms marching FinSubs to ATMs and ordering the sub to hand over as much cash as they can withdraw. So it is a kind of professional domination that can be done in person and sometimes is, but it does mostly seem to take place online. You can easily fall down a rabbit hole on Twitter. There seem to be a limitless number of actual and aspiring FinDoms on Twitter, and online interactions are all that many FinSubs are interested in. So this remove, this distance, yeah, FinDom was definitely a safe form of Dom sub play during the pandemic. And I imagine a lot of people who were tempted to explore FinDom before the pandemic as either doms or subs gave it a try during the pandemic. Weiss doesn't get into the origins of FinDom too much. I have my theories. Twitter came into our lives in 2006. The financial crisis hit 2 years later, and then suddenly it seemed like our political conversation was entirely dominated by discussions of economic inequality. And I think it was the confluence of all those things playing off each other that led to this kink thing taking off. Our erotic imaginations have a way of processing traumatic cultural events and even traumas and turning them into kinks. Not for all of us, but for a significant enough segment of the population that a new kink can take root and take off. A new kink that, like all kinks, riffs on long-established kinks. Because at the bottom of almost all kinks, you find power. It's just the ways we use power or relate to power or are made to feel powerful or powerless are constantly shifting. And our erotic imaginations, I think, are a kind of lagging indicator. Financial crisis in 2008, FinDom starts to take off in 2010. In 2011, makes the New York Times style section. What I was most impressed by reading this piece in the New York Times over the weekend was seeing the New York Times do what we have been begging reporters at mainstream publications to do for decades. If you're going to write about sex work, talk to sex workers. Not lawmakers, not cops, not prosecutors, sex workers. And their clients, talk to them too, which is what the New York Times did in this case. And what Weiss found doing her reporting and what she relayed to her readers was that this is a job. A job that Mistress Marley enjoys and is good at, and it's a service her clients enjoy and even benefit from emotionally and psychologically. Some people are no doubt going to argue or have been arguing since the piece came out that the picture the story paints is too rosy. And yeah, there are certainly some unscrupulous FinDoms out there, but there are unscrupulous lawyers and contractors and doctors out there too, and we don't fill every story about the law or home remodels or healthcare with horror stories about the unscrupulous people you can find in those fields. And why not? Well, because most people, all people, regard these fields as work, as legitimate work, and that's not the case, not yet, with sex work. So it was refreshing to read a story about a niche kind of sex work that centered, as the kids like to say, that centered the voices of sex workers and their clients instead of the voices of cops and prosecutors and religious anti-sex activists, people who profit from the prohibition of sex work, people who argue that sex work should be illegal because it's dangerous but refuse to see that sex work is dangerous because it's illegal. Well done, New York Times. Well done, Alexandra Weiss. And good for you, Mistress Marley. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast and on the Savage Lovecast Magnum edition that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com. More calls, more questions, more guests, no ads on the Magnum. Go to savagelovecast.com to subscribe. Today on the Magnum, I chat with Justin Randall, comedian, actor, co-host of the We Were Christian Kids podcast, and the hottest man in Omaha. All that coming up on today's show. Me Undies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. And to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by DoorDash, the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Get 25% off and zero delivery fees on your first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOVECAST.
Dear Dan, I'm a 40-year-old gay man from Germany. My boyfriend of 11-year husband since 2 years is American, so that's how I know your show. And I have a quarantine success story to share. Like a few days ago, I came home from work. I'm a doctor, so I came home late and everything was really shit. And then I took a shower and we went to bed together. And I was somehow horny as fuck and so was my husband. And we were just laying there naked next to each other. He came on top of me and we were just rubbing our naked bodies against each other, got hard. And somehow, like after a few minutes of this very intense rubbing, I just came all over my body and he kept rubbing his body against mine. And so I was there all covered in cum and I had one of the best orgasms in years. And so unexpectedly, you know, when I was laying there all naked and all covered in cum, I thought, yeah, you can be mad at a lot of things right now, but it's hard to stay mad when you're covered in cum. And so I thought things are getting better and, you know, we will get through this all together, this whole COVID thing. And I'm actually looking forward to everything. So everyone out there, stay safe, stay sane, and always look at your partner right after you took a shower.
Me, sometimes I remember why I'm mad at somebody just as soon as I'm covered in their cum or my cum. But individual results may vary. Glad it worked for you, caller. Glad it was a sex success story for you. We like to begin each week's show with a sexual success story before we get to everybody's sex and relationship problems. If you've got one and you'd like us to open next week's Savage Lovecast with your success story, give us a buzz, share, and you might hear your success story next week.
Howdy. I recently ran into a friend, maybe someone that I just followed on Instagram, that I had a crush on. I knew she would be at the fucking club, and I was there. We came in, and as soon as I saw her, I chased her into the bar, offered to buy her a drink. She didn't remember who I was, showed her my ID. We were wearing face masks due to the COVID, and it was all cool. We got the thing. She went and did her thing for a minute, came back, found me a table. We had a couple cool fucking interactions, some fun interest things, and then she left me. And my heart was beating the whole time. I don't know if it's the one, but we'll see. Let me know what you think.
Welcome to Listener. If you were a regular listener, if you were a longtime listener, you would know how I feel or what I think about the whole concept of the one. There is no one out there. There's a lot of 0.67s and 0.78s and the occasional 0.82 or even 0.83. And it's your job to find one of those people, one of those many 0.64s, rare 0.78s, even rarer still 0.82s, and then round that motherfucker up to the one. There is no the one. The one is a compliment that we pay someone. We treat them like the one. They treat us like the one. And somehow, in the being treated like the one, we become a little bit closer to being the one. The more you treat that 0.64 like the one, the more they become a 0.78. So that's how I feel about the one. Obviously, I don't think that this girl that you kind of stalked into this bar, sounds like you were checking her out on Instagram and figured out where she would be and when she would be there. So you didn't just run into her. You were trying to make your luck happen. That's fine. People do that all the time, particularly on social media, with social media. Sometimes people before social media used to go to bars and see somebody and then go back to that bar at that same time, hoping to run into that person again. It's not something necessarily super new and super creepy, even though online stalking does kind of make people feel uncomfortable when they contemplate it. And it does seem like that's kind of what you're doing, and I'm a little uncomfortable endorsing it. Anyway, is this woman the one? No. The woman didn't recognize you, ran off after accepting the drink from you to do her own thing. I imagine she was taking some swings through the bar to check out the other talent on offer that night and then left without you. Odds that she feels the same way about you, that she's endowed you with the same hopes that you've endowed her with, are very slim. I can't rule them out. Still within the realm of possibility. Maybe you'll run into her again. And that night she was looking for somebody that she had stalked on Instagram who was supposed to be in that bar, and she really couldn't take you in because she was on the hunt for the person she was stalking on the internet. And maybe you'll run into her again. And maybe you'll run into her again without face masks and you won't have to produce ID for her to recognize you. I can recognize people that I know with face masks on. Generally, I don't need to card my friends. We're lovers to make sure it's them, despite the face masks we're all meeting up wearing. Anyway, maybe you'll run into her again. She'll recognize you, and she will no longer be pursuing the one she thought was the one, because that one wasn't interested in her in the same way that she, at least at this moment, isn't interested in you. Don't wait. Obviously, it didn't happen that night. It is your job to move on from the events of that night with the assumption that it ain't going to happen and put yourself out there, get on Tinder, get on other apps, get off Instagram. Don't stalk people on Instagram. Get on the apps where people are putting themselves forward and inviting contact from strangers, and see if something doesn't happen with somebody else. But if you run into her again, go ahead, say hello. If she has to card you again to remember who the fuck you are, obviously you're not in the running for her to round up to the one. And I don't want to bag on you too hard. People, you know, they got to put themselves out there. They've got to take the risk. They've got to ask somebody to buy them a drink to make that first contact. And without anyone making that effort, nothing ever happens. So good on you. But you don't want to try to make a guess about who was or wasn't, quote unquote, the one, when you're drunk, or when you're drunk and you've just struck out, which kind of sounds like what happened that night was you struck out and you called me while you were still drunk. So your judgment on what did or didn't happen that night, or what may or may not be possible in the future based on what did or didn't happen that night, might not be the best at this particular moment while you're still drunk. Rethink this when you're sober, and maybe the next time you meet up with her or run into her, please don't stalk her, stay sober and use your best judgment, your non-impaired judgment, and then make an assessment about whether there is any mutual attraction or mutual interest. Based on what's already transpired, I'd say it's a long shot. Most likely not mutual interest, mutual desire. But you never know. Can't rule it out. The world is full of people who are partnered with people who the first time they met didn't even consider them, overlooked them. And then the next time they met, they sparked. So could still be possible, but don't wait around for that to happen. Put yourself out there. Meet some other people on some apps and websites where people are asking to be met. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by MeUndies, makers of the most comfortable underpants imaginable, makers of the underpants I am wearing right now. The fabric they use is silky and wonderful, and you will feel it as I am feeling it. They offer new styles and patterns all the time, and their sizes run from XS to 4XL. You know, I've been wearing my MeUndies, not this particular pair, but pairs of MeUndies for years. I love their new line, newish line of hoodies. They're simply perfect. And Nancy's kids are really enjoying MeUndies bralettes. Sounds like a girl group. Kind of is, but really comfortable. And Nancy's kids love them. Never run out of undies or have to worry about skipping laundry day again with MeUndies membership. Each month, replenish your basics and build your collection with styles that are anything but basic. Styles that let you be the truest version of yourself, right down to your core. And no pressure, you can always skip a month if that's what you want to do. Plus, enjoy discounted pricing, controlled shipping, and exclusive early access. Love your butt. Get the MeUndies membership. MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, you get 15% off and free shipping. MeUndies also has their problem-free philosophy. If you're not satisfied with any product for any reason, they'll refund it or exchange it. No caveats, no questions. To get 15% off your first order and free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/savage. Be sure to let them know the Lovecast sent you by going to MeUndies.com/savage.
Hello, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I'm a heterosis male in my late 20s living in Alaska, and I was wondering if you or your listeners had heard or experienced any effects on libido from the COVID vaccines. Specifically, speaking with my friends, we who have had the Pfizer vaccine have had a strong sexual response to both injections. One friend reported she had 10 orgasms in one session after the first injection. For myself, I noticed that aside from the usual sore arm and fatigue, my usually low libido had skyrocketed. When I orgasmed the day after the second dose, it was the strongest orgasm I have had in a long time, and my refractory period was much shorter than normal. So my question is, are these effects legit, or is it just a happy coincidence for me and my Pfizer-vaccinated friends?
It's true. I don't know why this isn't on the cover of the New York Times. Yes, COVID-19 vaccines make you multi-orgasmic, spike your libido. They make your dick bigger. They make your cum sweeter. They wire your tits and you don't have to clean out before anal. It's a miracle. Everyone should get vaccinated just for these sexual side effects. Should be splashed across the front of the New York Times. They should be talking about it from the podium in the White House briefing room. All right, caller. I actually haven't heard about this anywhere else or from anyone else, but Yahtzee, that's great. I'm so glad that you and your friends had what were probably coincidental experiences where shortly after you got vaccinated, you had some libido spikes that you've attributed to the vaccine. That's awesome. Probably not a side effect. I think if this was legitimately a side effect, Anthony Fauci would be talking about it on cable news programs 24 hours a day because it would prompt everyone out there to get vaccinated. The much more common experience after vaccination, I got vaccinated. I was knocked out for 3 days, couldn't get out of bed for a day as the antibodies kicked into gear, as my body began to fight off what it thought was a COVID-19 infection, but was just the vaccine fooling my body into fighting it off so that I would be safer when I encountered the actual virus out there in the wild. And I didn't have multiple orgasms. My dick didn't get any bigger. My tits didn't get any more wired than they already are. But I'm still glad I got vaccinated. And everybody should get vaccinated. And hey, if it helps, maybe this is just an undocumented side effect. And soon we will know that multiple orgasms are something that happens to people who get vaccinated, just like we eventually figured out that we did indeed need to wear masks. So we can't rule this out. So might as well err on the side of getting vaccinated just in case you'll get multiple orgasms in the deal. Did you forget that one thing at the store? Do you know how annoying it is to have to go back to the store for that one thing? Now you don't have to. You can get that thing, that snack, that drink, that household essential in 30 minutes with DoorDash. DoorDash connects you with restaurants you love right now, and they bring that great food that you miss right to your door. And now you can get the grocery essentials you also need at DoorDash too. Get drinks, snacks, other household items delivered in under an hour. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want from where you want, and your items will be left safely outside your door with the contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your neighborhood go-tos or choose from your favorite national chains when you order on DoorDash. And for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOVECAST. That's 25% off, up to $10 value, and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter the code LOVECAST. Don't forget the code LOVECAST for 25% off your first order with DoorDash. Subject to change, terms apply.
Hi, Dan. 33-year-old white female pan. I am a PhD student, currently enrolled in a pretty prestigious program, genomics. And, you know, I really want to teach and do research at a university. I want to be a mentor to students that are looking to be mentored, essentially. And the thing is, I feel like I am sort of a non-traditional woman who is pursuing a career in academia, meaning that I have an OnlyFans, and I started this OnlyFans kind of towards the middle of the pandemic, as a lot of people have. And at first I was really ashamed of it, because I had always been taught that women in academia going into STEM or whatever, essentially, you have to pick and choose between do you want your brains to show, or do you want people to know you for your body? And so it was kind of thrown up in the air at me that, like, well, you know, you can't let people see that you're sexy. Well, when I started the OnlyFans and I tried to keep it a secret, another colleague of mine found out about my OnlyFans, and that turned into a pretty big to-do. He essentially got kicked out of the program because he tried to blackmail me and such with my OnlyFans. But I've learned to feel very empowered by my OnlyFans. And now that more people are learning about it, it's sort of been something that my partner and I even, you know, it kind of helps us sexually. We're in a long distance relationship, and, you know, he gets excited when he logs onto my OnlyFans and sees what I'm doing on there. But I guess my question to you is, what's your opinion on women who are pursuing pretty professional career roles, also being a sex worker, essentially? You know, me, I feel like, you know, women should fight for it, and, you know, they should be able to express themselves. However, but I don't know, I kind of wanted to get your opinion on the matter of having an OnlyFans and being a sex worker, despite wanting to go into academia.
Well, my opinion is that it should be no barrier that someone has done or is doing sex work as their main gig, or sex work as a side hustle, should be no barrier to any other passion or career or profession that they want to pursue. The problem is that my opinion doesn't rule the world as much as I would like my opinions to rule the world. And there are lots of examples out there, mostly of people who stopped doing sex work, mostly of people who did porn for a while or did sex work for a while, and then went into some other line of work, often working with children, who then got into trouble when parents found out that their kid's homeroom teacher, or even high school math teacher, and in some cases college educator, had a past in porn. And a lot of sex negative, porn negative assholes out there want people to stop doing porn and to get out of sex work, but then want to make sure that anybody who exits porn or exits sex work can't do anything else. I guess they think they're just supposed to curl up on the floor and die when they stop doing sex work, if they don't support them going into some other line of work, particularly teaching. Anyway, I don't think it should be a barrier. You may encounter barriers because other people do think it's a barrier. The world is changing, though. You know, a lot of the stories that leap instantly to my mind when I get questions like yours from people who are doing kind of sex work and worrying about whether it's going to screw up their professional lives down the road. A lot of the stories that leap to mind are 10 years old, 15 years old, even 20 years old and up. I think we're undergoing a kind of cultural shift about sex work, also about online evidence, because everybody, not everybody's doing sex work, but everybody is swapping dirty pictures of themselves on the internet, and everybody's kids, even if the adults aren't doing it, and adults are doing it, and adults do it, actually, studies have found, at just as high a rate as the youngsters we're all supposed to be worried about all the time do it. Everybody, for the most part, almost everybody is swapping dirty photos and videos online, is flirting online with, you know, people they intend to be in romantic relationships with, or they're just showing off. And it's sort of like the dirt on all of us is out there. So if we create a cultural norm or standard that when that dirt surfaces, or somebody, you know, engages in revenge pornography campaigns against a person, you know, could happen to you next. There, but for the grace of God, go you. So you don't want the cultural norm to be that if someone's photos are surfaced and sent to all their colleagues at the university, that their career is over. You don't want to support that cultural norm, because even if it's not your picture circulating at this moment, you could be next because your photos are out there and you're one angry, vindictive, vengeful ex away from the same fate. And so we all want to de-escalate here. It's kind of a mad situation, mutual assured destruction. My pictures are out there somewhere. Your pictures are out there somewhere. Can't we all agree that having pictures out there somewhere, whether we were just flirting or swapping dirty videos and images with somebody we were romantically involved with, or whether we were doing OnlyFans for a little while in a period of our lives where we needed that kind of work and support, and a lot of people turn to that kind of sex work during the pandemic, if it's all out there, let's all agree, let's all join hands and agree that this should end no one's career. That's the world I've always wanted to live in, and increasingly I think that is the world I do live in, and more of us do live in, but not all of us live in that world. If you want to go teach at Brigham Young University, if that's the university that offers you a job, or Wheaton College or Boston University, it could be a problem for you. If your students, the people you're mentoring, or your colleagues find these photos, I think it'll be less of a problem at more progressive institutions and less religious institutions. So you might want to hone your job search with, you know, an eye over your shoulder on what you were doing in the past before you land that first teaching gig in academia. I don't think you have anything to be ashamed about, you know, riffing on that Eleanor Roosevelt quote, no one can make you feel ashamed without your consent, and you shouldn't consent to being or feeling shamed. My hesitancy in telling you, you know, what my opinion is if my opinion is prescriptive, is that not everyone currently holds my opinion, shares my opinion on this, nor will everyone at some point all hold my opinion on this. And you could face career bumps because of it. But you've already done it. And so what's done is done. And you're going to face those career bumps whether you stop now or don't stop now. So I'd encourage you not to stop, to do what you feel good about, do what you feel safe doing, do what you enjoy. You clearly enjoy this little side hustle. And then don't apply at Wheaton College or BYU or Boston College. Good luck.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. They make it easy to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store without having massive web design or coding skills. Squarespace is your all-in-one solution for domains, websites, online stores, marketing tools, and analytics. They're kind of like your benevolent partner or co-creator. For instance, with their analytics tools, you can see exactly how many people are cruising into your site, how long they hung out there, what they clicked on, how much they spent, if you're selling stuff. Would you know how to set all that up on your own? No, you would not. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of helpful info and support that Squarespace offers. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. So there is this guy that I fucked a couple months ago, and he's fucking gorgeous, like Magic Mike type buff dude, amazing. But we only fucked the one time, and ever since then, he has posted a lot of things on his Snapchat about how masks are stupid, and if you believe in masks, you're pathetic, and like a bunch of anti-mask stuff. So I kind of engaged him in a conversation on Snapchat, just trying to gauge what his like beliefs are, and pretty much he just like spewed some right-wing bullshit at me, saying that the CDC says that masks only work 1% of the time. And the fact that I believe that masks work is makes me like a science denier, just like completely backward logic. But anyway, so obviously I'm not going to like fuck him, even though I would love to because he's super fucking hot. But like this level of idiocracy is just mind blowing. So I just want to know what you would do. Would you engage him some more? Try to get him like come at him with a really logical argument? Would you fuck him again? Would you just block him? Just let me know.
What would I do in this situation? Well, in the pandemic situation, I wouldn't be fucking brand new randos. No shame, not heaping shame up on you, but I wouldn't. You asked me what I would do. I wouldn't, in the first place, have fucked some brand new rando, however hot he might be, however Magic Mike he might be, however buff he might be, in the middle of a pandemic. Presumably, he wasn't wearing a mask, considering how he feels about masks. When you met him or when you fucked him, that's the advice we've gotten from public health officials around meeting up during a pandemic with people you haven't fucked before is you should keep your masks on, eat ass, don't suck face. Presumably this anti-mask idiot wasn't wearing a mask when you hooked up with him and neither were you. Hopefully you both emerged from that encounter unscathed. But that's my first answer to the what would I do question. In the first place, I wouldn't have fucked this brand new maskless rando. If you want to argue with him, the CDC that he's citing in error has an entire page on the evidence for the effectiveness of mask wearing during this pandemic. And you could send him that link. But you can't be in the room with this guy without risking your own health and safety. You know this guy is taking unreasonable risks in the middle of this pandemic. A lot of people who are anti-mask are also idiotically anti-mask, and the idiocy extends to being anti-vax, anti-vaccines, so he's probably not vaccinated or going to get vaccinated. And so you don't want to be alone in a room with him. You didn't ask me what you should do. You asked me what I would do. I wouldn't want to make the mistake of being alone in a room with this guy again, however hot he might be, however good the sex might be. There are other gorgeous, buff, hot Magic Mike types out there who will wear masks, who do wear masks, who aren't right-wing conspiracy theorists, pickle-brained idiots like this guy is. So what would I do? I would not fuck this guy. Well, I wouldn't have fucked this guy in the first place, but I certainly wouldn't fuck this guy again. Some people you can fuck some sense into. Other people you can't. Doesn't sound like this guy is someone you or I could fuck any sense into.
Hey, Dan. I am calling for advice from my mother, actually. Something pretty weird happened to her yesterday. She got an email that basically said that I have your password. It listed her password in the subject line, like commonly used passwords on different sites, I guess, and said that we have footage of you watching porn and we will release it unless you send Bitcoin money, and we'll send it to all of your contacts. And obviously she freaked out and she disclosed it to me. And I don't want to think too much about my mom watching porn, but I know that's a standard thing for most people, and that's okay. I was supportive and I just tried to tell her that, first of all, maybe she should submit a police report just to be on record. I suggested maybe she gets ahead of it, like, and just tells people, hey, if you receive a link to something like this, then, you know, please don't open it. Respect my privacy. And I'm just not really sure what else to tell her to like calm her nerves, because for right now she's just like, oh, it's a waiting game where she looked up an article that said that this was a scam. So don't, you know, obviously don't pay it. She's not going to. But if something like this gets out, it's just super, super embarrassing. I mean, she has work contacts. She was just let go from one job, just being laid off, and might be searching again for another job in the same industry. And it's really embarrassing, and she doesn't know how to process it. And I'm not sure how else to help her, what else to say. Have you heard of this?
I remember the first time I got that email, the exact same email that your mother got. And I wish I could say that I was just like, oh gosh, this is total bullshit. What a scam. But I had a moment's panic. And then two things occurred to me. They hadn't enclosed a screen grab. If somebody had an incriminating video and they wanted to make sure that you paid up so that they didn't send that incriminating video to everyone in your contacts that they claim to have downloaded from your computer, they would send a screen grab. They would send proof, just like in the hostage situation in olden times. They would send you a picture of the relative they'd kidnapped with today's newspapers so that you know they were still alive and you would pay up. And there was no screen grab. And I thought, well, that's weird. And then I remembered that I don't really watch much internet pornography. I'm very much like a lot of women out there. I prefer, when I do consume pornography, I like erotica. I like dirty stories. I like to read, not watch. There are places I don't think that you should point a hot light and a camera at. It is sexy to look, as I do to imagine. And so what would this blackmailer have? A video of my eyes slowly going back and forth across the text? Like, what would they have on me? Anyway, that email kept coming. I never paid up that first time, and the email kept coming and coming and coming. I've gotten it hundreds of times. It is a scam. The FTC uses the information it gets from people who report scams to keep close watch on trends. And the big trend now is emails say they've hacked into your computer and recorded you visiting adult websites. So it is bullshit, and the FTC says it's bullshit, and I say it's bullshit, and you can tell your mom that I never paid up and no one ever sent a video of me sitting in my living room quietly reading erotica on the internet in the middle of the night. And she doesn't need to worry. She just needs to delete that email and brace herself for more like it, because they're coming.
Hi, Dan. A 29-year-old bisexual woman calling in from the East Coast. I wanted to ask your advice on the most recent installment of my tragicomic adventures in online dating. I started chatting with this guy on Tinder. He seems great, really enjoying the conversation, and he tells me enough information for me to find him on Google. And I see he's the son of a former politician, kind of like a well-known-ish person in my area. And then I keep scrolling down in the search results and find that he, in 2011, was charged with breaking into 3 cars and stealing stuff out of the cars. So he got charged with, like, petty larceny and breaking into a vehicle. But anyway, he was completely repentant when he got caught. Don't know if that, you know, redeems the action. As I say it out loud, it seems like this should be an obvious deal breaker. You know, talk about indicator of bad judgment. I mean, people make bad choices when they're young. They do dumb shit. But it's not like he just egged a house. Like, he committed a serious misdemeanor. Like, is that a minor felony? I don't know. But anyway, my immediate impulse was like, well, you know, we shouldn't judge people for mistakes that they made a decade ago, you know. I don't know why he did that. You know, people are redeemable and shouldn't be judged by their past mistakes. And he seems like a genuinely good person. So I don't know. I figure get to know him, see if it's actually something I want to pursue. You know, this might not even be an issue if I don't want to, and then go from there. But am I being naive? Should this epic bad judgment just be like a deal-breaking red flag? Should I bring it up before meeting him and see what he says? Would love your thoughts on this.
Some listeners are probably going to have a problem with the fact that you Googled this guy before your first date with the information that he'd shared with you that led you to his criminal record. I don't have a problem with that. When you take intimate partner violence into consideration, when you take the numbers of women out there who are abused or murdered by their male romantic partners, I think it's wise for a woman to do what you have done here. I think it's common, actually, for women to Google guys who are thinking about dating and do their screw diligence to protect themselves. Some guys react negatively to this because it hasn't occurred to them, because they're not at the same degree of risk that any woman is when she gets into a relationship with any man. So I fully support you Googling this guy. What you found out, though, seems to me to be rather trivial. Seems to me that if you went on a few dates with this guy and you got to know him better, that this is the sort of thing that when you start talking about your teen years and what high school was like and the often, for most people, bumpy transition into adulthood, that he would maybe share these facts with you. He didn't harm anyone. I mean, he harmed people. He broke into cars. That's bad. People who have their cars broken into, it's really expensive to get those windows replaced, to get whatever was stolen replaced. It can make a person feel unsafe in their own neighborhood and really violated. It's not nothing. But he didn't rob people on the street. He didn't hold people up at gunpoint. He didn't physically harm or terrorize anyone. So I think what you went on Google looking for was information about his past that might indicate that dating him was a bad idea because you would be in danger. I don't think you're in danger. You're not a Honda Civic. And I think at some point he's going to tell you about this. If he never tells you about it, if you date him for 3 months, 6 months, and it never comes up, you might want to tell him. Like, I found this out early when I was thinking about dating. I've gotten to know you. Here I am 6 months later. Obviously, I don't have a problem with it. But can you tell me about it? What happened? And he was probably just a shitty teenage boy doing shitty teenage boy things before his frontal lobe had fully grown in. It's the judgment centers of the brain that come in last. And he probably just had terrible judgment and was acting out. You also say he's the son of a prominent politician. It is often the case that preachers' kids and politician kids, to assert their own identity separate from their parents, smash shit a little bit, sometimes to terrorize their parents. May have been the case here. If you date him and he seems like a good guy and he's not pulling over on the way back from your date to rob a couple of cars on the way back to your apartment, I don't think it's going to be a problem. And when that moment comes where you share some of the shitty things you both did in your teen years and childhood, I imagine you won't have misdemeanor charges, you won't have theft charges to share, but you'll probably have one or two things about your teen years that you can share too that might give someone else who is thinking about dating you pause if that was all they knew about you. So maybe have a little bit of empathy, and I think you should date this guy and see where it goes. All right, before we get to your response calls for the week, let's read some of this week's tweets. Listener Stephanie Anthony tweeted about the show, Tim Keller, the pastor you mentioned at the top of Savage Lovecast episode 754, is very publicly not one of the good ones, Dan. Major leader in a denomination that refuses women in leadership, calls homosexuality a sin, etc. The welcome stuff is just to get people in the door in order to change them. Women and LGBTQ, always second-class status. You're right, Stephanie. Turns out Tim Keller, not one of the good ones, one of the baddies. Thank you for pointing that out. The Victoria Ford tweets, a friend fretted that her monogamous marriage was missing something, but she didn't want to open it or end it. I said to her, Dan Savage says we can't expect our partners to be everything for us. Light bulb. She says the advice saved her marriage. Okay, Victoria. How did it save her marriage? She didn't end it, obviously. Marriage saved. But did she open it? Inquiring minds want to know. We clearly needed another tweet here, Vicky. And finally, non-Savage Lovecast listener, Twitter rando Doug Collins tweeted, what's the nicest compliment you've ever received? And Savage Lovecast listener Josh Silverman replied, someone told me you're like my own personal Dan Savage. Aw, thank you, Josh. That's the nicest compliment I've received in a while, particularly on Twitter. We appreciate everybody who tweeted about the show this week or posted about it to your social media. I see you guys on Instagram. Really appreciate it. Help spread the word about the show. If you want me to read your tweet on next week's Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now our listeners' response calls.
Hey, Dan. This is a response call to the lady who is considering going to Vegas for her bachelorette party. Las Vegas local here. You hit the nail on the head. Social distancing and masks aren't great in Vegas, particularly in bars. So if you're really concerned, don't go to Vegas.
Hi, Dan. This is a response to your advice to the woman that was annoyed that her dates kept wanting to talk about open relationships. I don't think that she opened a conversation about this because OkCupid forces you to pick an option, monogamous, non-monogamous, or open to either, which I think is what she picked. I have my preference set to non-monogamous only, and I've learned to be a bit wary of people who choose the open to either option, because often that means that they're not looking for anything serious right now and think that open might be fun for a while, but they want to be monogamous again when they find a partner. If that's their approach, I would probably not want to plan that second date. So just saying we are both into open is not enough information for me. I want to know a bit more. Non-monogamous people usually enjoy talking about it, communicating, so I've not found it a problem bringing it up on first dates. If it is for her, that would be a little bit of a red flag for me. So I don't think that her dates are just excited. I think they are doing their homework to make sure that there are no disappointments later on. She could definitely ask to keep the details for later if it becomes too much, but I also think that the caller needs to allow her and her date to establish upfront what they both mean by being open.
Hey Dan, it's Carrie here from New Zealand. I just wanted to let you know that New Zealand is actually made up of 600 islands, so there is so much room for you and all of the other American gays. Yeah, you're totally welcome here. Just if you could take a COVID test first, that'd be great.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? There are two ways to get them to us. You can call the Savage Lovecast at 206-302-2064, or you can use the voice memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment about this week's show and email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. Hump's Greatest Hits Volume 3 starts streaming on April 30th, and it's a great mix of kinky, funny, and sexy dirty short films chosen from the last 16 years. The Hump Film Festival. Go to humpfilmfest.com to watch the amazing trailer, entertaining all by itself. Read about the films and get your tickets at humpfilmfest.com. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow the hottest man in Omaha on Twitter at I'm Justin Randall. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week in an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.